Well, folks, I'm all fired up. This is Jungle Jim from the Suspendables. Russ Cortland is joining me again this week, as we do each and every week, brought to you by Global Story Network. On today's show, Russ has a very good take on the Colin Kaepernick thing about him protesting, kneeling down during the national anthem. He's got wonderful things to say about that. What are players allowed to do, protesting and all that stuff? Also, what's allowed from players' lives that people should know, the privacy, should that be protected more than other people, et cetera, et cetera. We got more to say about that. But really, really what's good is a great story Russ has about a parent strip club closing down in Montreal and one of the oldest gags in the world that he did. All that and more coming up on The Suspendables. Rusty boy.
Hey, my friend. How are you?
Good. Okay. You know, I'm always trying to think of an introduction, Russ, to start the show. And this is all. It's always good. Huh? I can always tell Russ, I go, I hope he's had a few beers. He has a few wines. And because then it's very good. The show's really
good. I'm off beer.
You're off beer?
Yeah.
Good. Well, this will be a good show.
I'm on hard seltzers now.
Good. Okay. Well, let's talk about that. Welcome, everybody. This is The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and him, Russ Cortnell. Here's the deal. This is a big day for us, Rusty. Okay. We did 10 shows, and I know what happened. Okay. And then we stopped for a little while. Our partners, Global Story Network. You can check them out, globalstorynetwork.com. They got a ton of podcasts they're doing. And you know what they did, Russ? Right?
What?
I thought this was a long-term relationship, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think what they did is, okay, we've heard these 10 shows. Let's hear if people like two idiots. Anyway, we have a huge thank you to our listening audience. We're up over 30,000 listeners. Thanks a lot to you guys for listening and Global Story for as I said, flying with us with this thing. It's out of the gate, and I got a feeling it's going to be here for a long time, so thanks to all those people. Shout out, Russ. I'm doing my shout-out session. I was laughing. I played in a golf tournament yesterday with a guy named Bryn, and he came running at me, tackling me. I felt like a celebrity, Russ. He's like, I need your picture. My wife and I, Natasha, listen to you and Russ all the time. And I
said, oh, nice.
I said,
nice.
That's great. I said, I got to ask. Because we didn't really set out doing this show saying we're going to attract a bunch of women while we do this.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, no, my wife loves it. I said, good. Well, listen, does she want me to sign something? And he said, no, she loves Russ. I said, what? She goes, because you two, she goes, I listen to you, Jungle, because you remind me of what a degenerate my husband is. But I love Russ and I love the stories. So it's a little shout out to Bryn and Natasha. And our other shout out in Northern Ontario, I was up there while we took a break to Bowie and Gumper. Okay, Bowie and Gumper. These two guys are sort of the unofficial mayors of Sudbury, who are big listeners and a bunch of people. So,
well, thanks for listening.
I think, Russ, what they were doing, you know, they told us they had a bunch of work to do technically and all this stuff, but they were waiting to see, Russ, whether they were going to allow us to do this again. And we're back at it, partner.
We're back. Nice. Yeah.
So what have you been doing? We've been a few weeks. This is show 11, and we're back on regularity. We're going to be coming to you every week. We record it on Sunday night, and it gets up Monday the next day. So what have you been doing the last 3 weeks? I miss you, Russ. I really do.
Hey, I miss you too. And it was a nice introduction for almost 4 minutes. I could have had a fucking nap while you were talking. way to go, Jim. Jim's show and Russ the sidekick. I could have went out and fucking mowed my lawn. Oh, I don't have a mower.
Or as if you would mow your lawn. For people who are tuning in for the first time. Okay, you know, you watch on YouTube, you can see the life of luxury, like from princes and kings who live in the Middle East. Well, Russ lives like that here.
Oh, come on. Yeah. I've cut my own grass. But listen, I've missed you, buddy. It's been fun. I'm still up in I'm in Gozer, up in Idaho at Gozer Ranch, where you know, our listeners know there's a bunch of hockey players here. And
yep,
I've got my son Lawton here for a week, and his teammate Hugh McGing. They're here for a week. They're gonna skate with Tyler Johnson and a few of the other guys. Ty Ronning and Cliff Ronning are coming in for the week, and they're going to have a really good skates. They're going to skate three or four times this week, work out and have fun, hang out, and get ready to get back to school at Western Michigan.
Let's talk about your son. We are we're good luck for him. What's his stage now in hockey? Fill us in. What's going on? What happens for him next?
He's playing for Andy Murray out at Western Michigan, and he is a senior.
Yep.
And they live in, it's in Kalamazoo for the people in Canada who don't know where Western Michigan is. Mm-hmm. They're going to be a really good hockey team. They've got quite a few draft picks and some really good young players, and they've all stayed behind. A lot of these college kids get convinced they should turn pro before maybe a year or two too early. And these kids that they have on their team, they've decided they're all going to stay the seniors and some of the juniors, and they have a really strong team. So we're really excited for his final year in college, and then see what happens after that.
Of course, yeah, we talked about it either our last or second to last show about the day you got drafted. And you said there was like nothing like it. You knew you would get drafted, but there's always this part of you going, I hope they call my name.
Yeah.
And you recall that day as one of the greatest days of your life. And you had some good days as a hockey player.
Yeah, it was so amazing. I was in Montreal at the draft and had never been to Quebec. I hadn't been past Winnipeg, actually. Mm-hmm. Till the draft. And I got drafted by my favorite team, got to play with my favorite player, Boreas Salming. And I was rated to go 10th pick overall. Mm-hmm. And I went seventh. So that was a bit of a surprise.
Right.
So I went three picks before I was supposed to. And it was great.
For those of you who are new to the program, if this is your first podcast you're listening to, Russ Courtnell, Russ got drafted, played in the NHL for 16, 17 years, played for Toronto, played for Montreal, played for Dallas. Where else, Russ? Do I got all?
Vancouver, New York, and LA. Got paid to see both countries.
Yeah, there we go. I guess you played for everyone in the league.
No, that would be Paul Coffey.
You had a great run. And, yeah, that's true. Paul, you had a great run and was a superstar player in the league. And, Russ got a hold of me to have a podcast, and we're off and running. And that's who you're listening to, Russ Courtnell. I am on here only because, I don't know. Let's move along.
Because I asked you.
Yeah, exactly. Because you asked me to do it. You got all the connections. And so every week we're here talking about stories, and Russ has got a million of them. And it's funny you ripped me. You ripped me at the beginning saying it was my intro was too much. I was doing a gig, Russ, the other night. I'm a comedian. Float around the country and do some gigs, and I was doing one here in town.
That's up for debate.
Yeah, really. And I was ripping a guy, Russ. Okay, I was ripping a guy on the mic, and the guy, I love ripping guys, Russ. But I gotta admit, I love getting ripped as much. Yeah. When the guy can come up with the good zinger, and you're the king, you're the absolute king. And the guy ripped me, and I started yelling back at him, and he said, "Save your breath, dude. You're going to need it to blow up your date." I love it. I love getting ripped. And I've put a bunch of weight on, Russ, over the summer, right? And so now I got the noticeable 20-plus pounds on the gut. And the guy says to me, "Jimmy, I got a great idea for you to make $1 million. You should sell shade."
Anyway. I thought he was going to say poor Jim was in a car accident and he swallowed the airbag.
I'm getting all that shit now. I never thought I'd get fat. Anyway, so that the other story is I saw online, Russ, on Instagram.
Uh-oh.
You can follow Russ here at Russ Courtnell or something on Instagram. I'm at Jungle Jerome on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. Your daughter, did she get a full ride scholarship to UCLA?
Yeah, we don't know the details yet, but our youngest daughter, Brooklyn, is 16. She goes to Oaks Christian down in LA, and she got a scholarship for soccer and track. So how that works, my oldest daughter, Allie, had the same deal. She'll get the first 2 years of soccer or track, and then the last 2 years of either or. So she'll play soccer and run track. And that was really important for her, whatever school she went to, that they would allow her to run track. So when she was getting recruited from all these colleges, the first words out of her mouth were, if I'm going to play soccer or run track, I need to do both. And some schools, especially if you're a scholar track athlete, they don't want you playing soccer because risk of injury and all that stuff. So she's following in her sister's footsteps, who did both and won a national title with UCLA. Their 110th national title. My daughter Allie was on that team. So wouldn't it be cool if Brooklyn in a few years at UCLA wins another national title? That would be quite a story if she could repeat what her sister Allie did.
UCLA has won 110 national titles.
More than that. More than that. But when Allie won it a few years ago, I can't remember what year it was. Probably right now 5 years ago.
Yep.
Maybe even six. And it was their 110th victory. And I was there. It was in Raleigh, North Carolina. Yeah. Raleigh.
Sure.
So we were at the game, and the girls win. They win the national title. All the parents who went, we're all together. We're crying. We're laughing. We're cheering. And the girls turn around in the stadium and run away from all the parents. I'm like, where are they going? We flew all the way here to celebrate.
Yep.
And they went to the stadium number, section number 110. And they took this picture of all the team in front of section 110. And then they Instagrammed it, or social media put it out there, because it was their 110th title. But since then, UCLA has won multiple national titles since then in other sports.
You remind me of my kids are not as accomplished as your kids athletically, and they've got my academic acumen, so they're kind of hooped actually for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
But I remember
future Uber drivers.
I can't. if they qualify. No, my kids are good. I love my kids. I was watching on the weekend, Russ. So you're a parent who gets to see your kids perform at a high level. And I was watching, there's a kid who's come up to play for the Blue Jays named Bo Bichette. And the Toronto Blue Jays are, of course, the baseball team here and in Canada. And the father was there. And it was the kid's first major league at bat.
Oh, boy.
Okay. And if he doesn't get a freaking hit, first major league. His father's a guy named Dante Bichette, who I knew from 30 years ago, who played here in Edmonton. There was a AAA farm club. And this guy was one of the toughest guys I'd ever met in my life. I mean, this guy was fucking tough, Russ. I saw him punching a pit bull one time, Russ. That's how tough this guy was. Anyway, he was beyond control emotionally when he saw the kid. And I can't imagine, for all the parents out there, what that must have been like when you see your daughter like that. You must have been a mess. I know you.
Well, I was. Yeah, I'm really emotional. And so we're on the lake, and it's Allie, it's Paris, and me. And
your wife
in Brooklyn. Paris, my wife, and Brooklyn, and I. So she has a 3:30 call with UCLA.
Yikes.
So we turn the music off. We're sitting very quietly on the boat, and Brooklyn's laying on her stomach, facing the back of the boat, and we're listening, and she's like, yeah. And then Allie videotaped it.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited. And we're like, oh my God, she's freaking accepting. She's going to UCLA. And so, my daughter Allie put it on Instagram, and we just got so many awesome comments, but it was so funny and so exciting and thrilling for all of us. But, it's one of those things that really Allie just she's an Instagrammer. So, but she didn't plan on it for Instagram. She was just doing it for us. And then it turned into this like very emotional. I watched the video about 10 times, crying my eyes out. My daughter Brooklyn's like, what's wrong? And I'm going, I'm watching your video of you accepting. It was just, as parents know out there, it's so exciting when your kids do something well and succeed at you know, something they love to do. It doesn't matter if it's sports, it could be music, it could be acting, it could be academics, it could be anything. And when they have success, then you have success. You know, it's like just a joy. It was great.
Of course, you never sort of thought anything about that when your own parents were telling you how proud they were of you, and you're like, whatever, right? But when you have your own kids, and it's that time of year, right? We're into August. The kids are getting accepted into schools. They're going back for whatever their deal is after the summer, whatever they're doing. So it's a big draft time where a lot of kids are going to junior hockey camps. I met a couple this summer, you know, who are playing in Ontario in the OHL. And, you know, it's interesting, Russ, your kids, you've always been in team sports, you and your brothers and your family, and your kids are now too. And I was talking to a guy today, and I want your thoughts on this, that, you know, everyone's worried about the, you know, there's always the drug problem and stuff like that. And there was a deal where this guy was saying, you know, thank God I got my kids into team sports because it created such a connection for them that he really believes it kept them out of trouble as a teenager. Yeah. And I'll tell you, there's something to say for that, because I know some guys, and one day I'll tell you my story here, but not today. But I know some guys who were never part of any teams, and I don't want to paint it with a wide brush, Russ, but a lot of those guys got into booze and drug problems who were not part of high school teams or other teams, you know, men's leagues or something like that. So, and I know your kids, and they're wonderful kids, and a bunch of kids I met this summer who are involved in hockey are just the nicest, sweetest young guys. It's a lot to say for team sports.
Well, I agree with that 100%. And I think that with children and young kids and young adults, they need to be busy. And when they're not busy, when they're bored after school, they get, you know, they can get into trouble. And so if they have something that that they look forward to doing and participating in, it could be anything from sports to drama to music, whatever, again, something that they feel good about and they've got to practice, and also dedicating time and to you, your teammates, your coaches. And there's a responsibility that you have to show up, you have to work hard, you have to respect your opponent, respect your teammate, respect yourself. There's so many things that kids learn from sport, and they carry that throughout their lives. And there's a dedication to being good at something that you don't want to let yourself down, your parents down, your team down. And on the weekends, like my kids, you know, they couldn't go to all those parties and they couldn't do this and they couldn't do that because they had a game the next day or they had a practice, and they just had to be ready and prepared. And I think that my oldest daughter, when we went through it with her as a teenager, trying to keep her staying on course, but her wanting to stay on course, you can't force kids into it. They've got to want it.
Right.
And we allowed her to go to a party Friday night, but we put a curfew on it and you had to come home, and she wasn't allowed to sleep over at these houses that have these so-called parties. Mm-hmm. When she got to school on Monday, she heard all the horrible stories of what happened to kids. Sure. And then over time, she didn't want to go to those parties anymore. But that's just my own experience with my kids.
And what about for you, Russ? Then what, I mean, you were a fantastic hockey player. You were a leader when you had to be. I've talked to you. I know you well. You were a follower when you had to be. What was your cycle like coming into hockey as a kid? You know, you lived in Victoria. There's as many distractions there as there is anywhere else. And yet, were you 9 to 5 or were you all day long, every single day from what age playing hockey? Or tell us about that.
No, I played lots of sports. I played soccer, hockey at the same time, because in Victoria, they play your same time of the year. And then in the spring, I played baseball. Then I ran track. So I was an athlete. I love sports. And then as I got older, I played a little bit of rugby. And I would drop the sports as I got older and just start focusing on hockey probably around 15.
Yep.
Today, a lot of kids just play one sport, and I disagree with that. But my dad passed away when I was 13. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 13. And he instilled in all of us the work ethic, the commitment, dedication, and then we just loved playing, so we always did our best. But there were times when, you know, we were mischievous kids too, and we got in trouble, but we didn't get in really, we didn't do anything really, really bad. But we definitely had some run-ins here and there and got in trouble, but nothing where it was life altering, life altering. Oh. So, I was just lucky. I had great parents, lost one when I was young, and then I had an awesome mom who did a great job raising us and paid attention. And when we got in trouble, boy, it was double trouble, because when you got in trouble at school or with the police, then you had to come home and really face, you know, what was going to really happen to us. Nothing really bad.
Wait a minute. Trouble with the police.
Well, you know, let's hear that. We'd raid our neighbor's gardens, and we might have egged a few houses and cars, and we never stole anything. We didn't do anything really bad, but when something went down in our neighborhood,
yeah,
you know, if we lit a paper bag on fire and put it on someone's porch and it was full of dog manure, and then ring the bell, they knew to come to our house. Where was Russ and Jeff?
That's a freaking Bugs Bunny routine.
Oh, yeah. You never did that as a kid?
We used to
light the bag, and then they come out and stomp it out, and it's full of dog shit.
I never thought of that, actually, and I know it's been around, you know. I did, mine was kind of lethal, because I got in a lot of trouble. They didn't call the cops, but I was holding a bottle of ginger ale. Do you remember Pure Spring ginger ale? Okay, the little long, narrow bottle.
Yeah.
But I filled it with gas.
And
I was pretending to my buddy that it was ginger ale. It was blazing hot.
I said,
do you want a sip? And he said, sure. So today, Russ, that would probably put you in jail. But back then it was fun. You know, it was a lot of fun. Listen, Rusty, I got a couple things I want to talk to you about.
Okay.
I played in a golf tournament. I love the action. I love...
My golf game sucks right now.
Is it bad? You're bad?
Oh, no, it's worse than bad. It's embarrassing.
Well, are you breaking 80 or are you breaking 85 or 90?
No, I'm barely breaking 100. I am telling you, I look someone who never played the game, and I don't know how to fix it.
Because I've always been amazed. When I moved out here with the Oilers in the 80s, a lot of hockey players started taking up golf, you know, they never played. I played golf my whole life. It took me 10, 12 years to break 80. My first time. I play with hockey players in about a year and a half or 2 years. They're unbelievable golfers.
Yeah, you know, that's not the case with me.
No, you're brutal. You're brutal.
Well, fuck, you were born with a silver spoon in your ass, so no wonder you can play golf. Like, really, who played golf as a kid in Canada?
A guy said to me the other day, silver spoon, because it's hard to believe, Russ, but I'm single still.
And oh, my God. Shocker.
Yeah. He said, Jim, the only way you're going to get laid if you shove your head up a chicken's ass and wait. Anyway, I played in a tournament.
Okay, back to you.
Yeah, exactly. So, because I want to ask you about this. I love the action. I love playing golf. I love gambling when I play golf. And I like good action. I like good action.
Yeah.
Not $5. I like to play for 50 or 100 bucks because they play better. And so we played in this tournament. 12 teams of two, you draw a guy, we throw in $500 each, and most of the money's given away. So like even if you place 12, you're going to get a couple hundred bucks back and stuff like that. And a couple things, everybody, Russ, by the way, everyone now is smoking pot. Okay. Yeah. In Canada, they're smoking, I showed up on the first tee, all the groups are there. We tee off. It takes about an hour to put all the 12 groups out, and everyone's smoking freaking pot. You know, mm-hmm. and they're not because they necessarily like it, Russ. It's almost like, well, fuck, we're allowed, man. Yeah. We're allowed. And I'm going, yeah, but you never smoke pot. I know, but it's allowed. You know, it's allowed now. It's like your mother letting you run instead of, and yeah, but mom said I could run. Anyway, so these guys are all blazed. But we end up winning about $1,200, me and my partner.
Nice.
Yeah. We end up winning. And it brings you to about gambling in sports. I want to ask you about this. It always seems to come up, the reminder for me about gambling and sports, about Hall of Fame inductions. And Pete Rose, of course, who was, you know,
caught
gambling, but had all the stats, all the length of time to play as a pro athlete. He was fantastic. Base stealer, Pete Rose is, played in the 70s and 80s, okay? For those of you who are younger, sorry about that. But he's been denied the Hall of Fame induction. And I'm wondering what your take is, Russ, on gambling. It's become legal in all states. It's legal throughout Canada. It's been in Europe for years. And I'm wondering what you think of pro athletes should be allowed to bet on games, including the ones they're playing in, as long as they're betting on their own team.
Oh, I think that players shouldn't be allowed to gamble. I agree with the legalizing gambling for people, but I just, for the regular Joe, but for athletes that are playing in the game, there's no way they should be gambling on the sport. I think that's wrong. And I believe that that legalizing it was the right thing to do, is the right thing to do. And I think it's great revenue for provinces and states.
Yeah.
You know, versus just you could only bet in Vegas and the casinos. I mean, why, if you can bet there, why shouldn't you be able to bet somewhere else? So,
well,
but I don't think players should be betting. I mean, come on, you bet, you're betting on, and then your buddies are playing on a team. Like, oh my God, like, hey, I'm deep in trouble here. I just don't agree that athletes should be betting at all. When you're retired, you can freaking bet all you want.
Yeah. I think I agree with you. Actually, I'll go with you on that one, that it's just opening up a can of worms, right?
No, it's, yeah.
And match fixing is the problem, right? That could be the problem, right?
Like the guy, yeah. I think in hockey, that obviously the star player you could get to and the goalie. But other than that, even if a player, like a mediocre player, bet on the game, he probably isn't going to change the outcome unless he took a 5-minute major in the last couple minutes,
right,
or something.
Right.
But yeah, really, you know, baseball, you can really affect football. I think in every sport, but hockey would be really hard to affect the outcome, other than the goalie and maybe the star player. What do you think?
Well, I think it's just a can of worms. I think it's you know, all these arguments that people have about it. They're always talking about the best case scenario, right? They're like,
yeah,
well, it should be okay if Russ Courtney played for the Canadians and he bet on them. And I'm going, that should be okay. You're right. But it doesn't stop there. That's what happens.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't stop. Right. That would be fine if guys just bet on their own team.
When I played in Montreal, this just reminded me of a story. Played for Pat Burns, who was a police officer before he started coaching.
Great guy.
Hall, huh? And yeah. Well, I don't know about a great guy, but he was a good coach.
Right.
And definitely not a great guy. And he used to come in the morning, and a few of us players would be out at this Italian nightclub owned by a couple of Italian guys called right. DeSalvio's. Great. It was the best freaking nightclub in Montreal, in my opinion, at that time in the 80s right. and 90s.
You'd know. You're the barometer for sure.
Small place and super cool. And the next day we'd come to practice and Pat would go, do you know who you were hanging out with last night? And I'm, you know, because all the cops would tell Pat what we were doing, what we were up to, right?
Right.
And we were hanging out, apparently, with these five Italian guys. I didn't know where they live. I didn't have their phone number. But right. every time we were at the bar, they would be buying us drinks. And all of them had a wad of cash on them. And
I want some Godfather music here, Russ.
And he said, you're hanging out with the mob. You're hanging out with the mob. And I'm like, who? He goes, those guys last night you were with. And I'm like, I don't even know their names. I mean, I might know one guy, but they're just buying us drinks. Yeah, next they're going to ask you to start. They're going to make you do something in the game, and they're going to be betting on the game. And I'm like, Pat, they're like our age, and they're just buying us drinks. It starts there, and then it ends ugly. And I'm like, oh, fuck it. I'm getting the free drinks. But he used to, every time we'd come in and we'd have a big night out, Pat would call, he'd skate up to us and practice and say something. like, you're hanging out with the bad guys, or you're hanging out with this guy or that guy. It was
How can a guy in hockey, Russ, you had mentioned there offhandedly, Pat, good coach, but not a very good guy. How can a guy who's a coach or a pro hockey player playing in the NHL, how can they not be good guys, Russ?
Well, Pat, coaches, some coaches think they got to be an asshole and they got to be tough and they got to keep everybody on the edge, right? And I'll tell you a story about Pat. I was in the league with him for his first 4 years in Montreal. So he's a rookie and I got traded from Toronto.
Right.
And I walked by every morning. I'd walk down this hallway to our dressing room and our changing room, and his office was to the right, just past the video room and the other coach's room. And he always had his door wide open. He'd be behind his desk. And every morning for 4 years, I'd walk by and go, good morning, Pat. And he never, ever said good morning back.
What?
And, oh, yeah, he was a prick. And, you know, I heard as he got, you know, he moved around and coached at different places that he kind of loosened up and became a better guy. But his first 4 years in Montreal, he was a prick. He was nice to Guy Carboneau, barely, who was our captain, and Chris Chelios. He was nice to Chelios. He loved freaking Chelios. I mean, who didn't? And he was hard, and he loved Patrick Waugh, but he was hard on everybody. He was tough, and he was, you know, I always said once a cop, always a cop. But Pat had this persona of being a badass, and he wanted everybody to know it. And he was just, he was tough.
Yeah,
he's a good coach. I mean, he got the most out of his players, but he ran some guys out. Yerky Loomy missed curfew by 20 minutes. He ran him out of Montreal so fast.
No kidding.
He ran Claude Lemieux, Stéphane Richer. He couldn't stand those guys. He ran them out of Montreal. Like if he didn't like you, man, he did his best to make sure you got out of there. He was brutal.
Well, I didn't know that.
I mean, you do now.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, good. That's not the way you want to go out. Pat died too young. He died too young. But
yeah, it's terrible.
But I don't want to go out that way. I don't want to go out that way. It's like a couple of there's a couple stories that have been floated the last few weeks since you and I finished our podcast. Took a few weeks off. And we're first one back. Colin Kaepernick, Russ, has become more famous for. He played for the San Francisco 49ers in the NFL, and he started kneeling during the national anthem. If nobody knows that story, it's been around for, that was 2-3 years ago that he did that. And, it garnered, tons and tons of attention. And, he hasn't played since then. It's been a few years, but he's talking about he's sending out almost these pathetic pleas on social media saying, here I am. I'm ready to play. And I don't think he'll be able to play. I don't know if he's good enough. And even if he is good enough, I don't know whether they will want him back to play. And, of course, this generates this conversation about did this guy have the right to do what he did, Russ? He was speaking out against, inequalities with black people. He's black. About some of the social injustice that these people have suffered at the time. There were some riots. I think there was a black guy who got killed at that time. I should know the details, but I don't. But I know the guts of it. And so he in protest, knelt down when they played the national anthem at the football games, speaking out against his country that they're not doing anything about these social inequalities. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that, Russ? Was the guy...
Well, so my wife is black. My kids are mixed. And I'm a proud Canadian, and my dad made us stand in the basement of our house Saturday night, hockey night in Canada, and he'd make us stand for the anthems when we were in our own house. So you can imagine and I played for my country. I'm so proud to be a Canadian. I'm proud to be living in the United States and in another great country. And so I agree with everything he is saying and raising the questions about what's happening to kids in black communities, and that he's drawing attention to those communities. I totally disagree with him on his knee. I think he could have done it without doing that, but he created a conversation through what I find is very disrespectful. Mm-hmm. For to be able to live in a country like the United States or Canada, and then you go against, you know, these people like our families have fought for the freedom for us to do what he's doing, mm-hmm. but to do that against during the anthem, I totally 100% disagree. And in fact, when my daughter, my oldest daughter lives, her boyfriend plays for the Minnesota Vikings. So he,
the hits just keep coming with your family. I know. Holy
so
Jesus.
His dad is, black, his mom's white. So mm-hmm. similar, but different than ours. And his dad played 7 years for the Argonauts. And, anyways, grew up in Fresno. They met at UCLA. They lived together in Minneapolis. They've been together almost 6 years. He's a great, great person, and I freaking love him. And I was watching a game, and when I saw him during the anthem standing, I went, "Thank fucking God he's standing," because that wouldn't have sat with me if he was kneeling. But I'll tell you, when I talked to my daughter Allie about it, and she was right in my face, like, you know, there's a lot of people that are not being treated the right way, mm-hmm. and he's raising concerns. Like, she was like, for his message, I doubt that Allie was for him kneeling, I hope, but she was right in my kitchen giving me shit about the about what he was standing for. So I agree with what his message, mm-hmm. just his delivery sucked. And I always say this about athletes. If you're good enough, no matter what you've done, there's a team out there that's going to sign you. Bob Probert got caught, arrested, going across the border with cocaine. He had problems throughout his career, and there was always a team willing to have him on their team, even though he had problems. So if Colin Kaepernick is a good enough football player, there's a team out there that would sign him. I call bullshit that he's not getting signed because he's kneeling. I call it total bullshit.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah.
And I'm not a big, like, I don't know a lot about football, but I know a lot about owners, and they want to win.
Right.
And they'll freaking sign a guy that has problems in order to win. And the guy's not getting signed. And I would guess that he's just not good enough.
Yeah. So here's because one of the arguments, I'm not getting in a debate here about who has the right to protest, okay?
Right.
That's their deal. You know, Tiger Woods, Russ, you bring up a great point. Tiger Woods did not carry himself with a decorum that, you know, that most teams or most organizations, in this case the PGA, would really like a guy, right? He had a bad run there, Tiger, with women, mm-hmm. admittedly, and stuff like that. But, you know, and he lost some sponsors. But Nike, right, who's got the greatest slogan in the world, the check mark or the swoosh and the just do it. Just do it.
Yeah.
And they came out and said, you know what? We pay our guys to win. We pay our guys to win. That's who we sponsor. Yeah. We sponsor winners. And they stayed with them. They stayed with them, you know. Yeah. Russ, what I wonder, though, is you played professionally in a professional league in the NHL. And if I'm the owner in the NFL, I'm of the opinion, first of all, this is our backyard, okay, that the league made you, okay, and I think I know you've said that too, that hockey made you who you were, you didn't make hockey, and if I'm an owner of that team, Russ, I'm telling this guy, I'm like, hey, come here, listen, I don't give a shit what your personal issues are, but you're not using this stage to do it.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's in your, I'm going to put it in your contract. And so my question, Russ, is how much right do players have? What do they give up personally? What are they allowed to do? What's allowed in their personal life that they're bulletproof against, or are they not? How do they have to carry themselves? What's right? What's wrong? You know, and my opinion may be unpopular, but I'm telling Colin Kaepernick, you're not doing that. This is my property.
This is my property. the owner should have, he should have ended it after the first time he did it and just said, look, if you're not going to stand for the anthem, I agree with what you're saying, but if you're not going to stand for the anthem, you're not playing on the team. But it was so political and people ran with it. And then other players start joining him. It just got out of control, like totally out of control. These, as athletes, we can raise money for charities that we never, ever thought we could. Mm-hmm. Ours is mental health. And we raise millions of dollars for mental health. You know why? Because we were freaking professional athletes. And he could have done this in a way that, he had a microphone in front of him every single day after practice, and he could have just kept talking about it and talking about it and talking about it, mm-hmm. and not disrespected people that have fought for those freedoms to you know, I guess back to, so he could do this, you know, frickin' other countries, they just take you out back and shoot you.
Right. right. Yeah.
You know,
God, I'm not laughing at that.
But that's the truth. We live in these, like Canada, the United States, we're free to do pretty much what we want within the law. And I just think if I was the coach, or not the coach, the owner, I would have taken him aside and said, look, it, great message. How can we help? But what you're doing is wrong, how you're doing it. But why don't you and I put together something and we raise awareness? Like, why, like all these Black athletes that play in these great cities across the country, mm-hmm. where are they raising awareness for what's going on within their community through fundraising, through education, through talking to the police? You know, if it's so bad, get off your frickin' knees and get out there and do something about it. Like, it just drives me frickin' crazy. I mean, our dad committed suicide, and Jeff and I and my younger brother, Bruce, we started this charity, and we're saving lives. We're helping people. And, you know, it wasn't something we wanted to do, but it was the hand we were dealt with. Mm-hmm. And then we went out and did what we did. And these guys have a stage that's way bigger than the stage we had. And I just think they could be doing so much more with it. And I disagree with the anthem and kneeling. It drives me crazy.
I've been around a bunch of charity. That's really, really well said, Russ. I really like what you had to say there, you know, that you could turn this thing into help. You know, the other problem is, Russ, that becomes laughable is when a guy like Kaepernick, who's a superstar when he came in, and he's talking about inequalities, and the guy's making millions a year and got huge endorsement deals, and, you know, you might want to pipe down a little bit, Capper, on this one until you rethink it, okay, pal?
I loved when he talked about Hillary Clinton, and he said something about her erasing her emails or something like that. Like he's you don't know which side he's. He's not on the right. He's not on the left. And I bet you if we sat down with him, we'd both really like him. He's doing what he believes is right. Just the way he's doing it sucks to me, but I'm sure if we got to hang out with him, we'd probably end up loving the guy. He's trying to help people. I don't like the way he's going about
it. Well, you know, in your day, Russ, the worst that could ever happen is if you said something in an interview and that's all that's on record. But with social media, man, you better know exactly what you're talking about if you want to take on the big, bad world of politics.
I think I've told the story before on the podcast, but I remember in Montreal, we thought Chez Paris, the favorite strip bar, burnt down.
Sure. Yeah, great.
So we wore the black armbands for practice. and the media was trying to figure out what the hell was going on. It was so funny.
No worries.
We did. I was 23. We had Bob Gainey, Larry Robinson, and I don't know whose idea it was, but somebody said, guys, let's put on – maybe it was Craig Ludwig. black armband. So we all put a ring of black tape around our right arms and went out there. So that was our, we weren't protesting. We were in mourning.
Oh, man, I love this stuff.
But it ended up, it was the building next door to the Chaperie, but on the radio, on the way to, I guess, practice, somebody was like, Chaperie burnt down. But it really was the building next door. And it was a no-name building. So the closest thing to it was Chaperie. Right. And every guy in Montreal knew where Chaperie was.
That's so funny. Yeah. If you live in Canada, Chaperie is like, it was the best peeler joint ever, you know. Put the black armbands on. That's great.
Yeah.
Rusty, what are we allowed to know about you personally? What are we allowed to know about the professional athlete personally? You know, what's private, what's public? Do you think, Russ, when you do sign up in pro sports, that your life changes from a private level?
100%. 100%. Serge Savard told me when I started playing in Montreal, he goes, you know, if you're a politician or a professional athlete, you have to be careful because everybody's watching and it's all going to get in the newspaper. What I think with social media now, it's, you know, guys who are playing or if you're a politician or whatever, famous person, other people are following and like intruding on your privacy and then sending it out. When I played, if you got into a problem, whether it was an argument in a bar or a fight or you did something wrong, then it was public knowledge. Now, a guy could be in the corner minding his own business, having a good time, or a girl having a good time, and somebody across the room is like videotaping it and then sends it out. I think that's unfair. But boy, these guys today, especially that, you know, my hockey guys, I mean, they just got to be so careful because people are looking for stuff. Look at that cab ride in Ottawa, the Ottawa Senators. Right. Where were they?
Those
the Uber fuckers. Guy. Yeah. I mean, everything they said was the truth, but geez, it was all over the news. I just think that kind of stuff is unfair when you're just having a conversation or having a dinner and somebody's taped it or filmed it and then they send it out. I think I don't agree with that.
You know, if you're listening in other parts outside of Canada, the Ottawa Senators are in the NHL, 30-team league, great league, one of the most successful ever in the world. And the Ottawa Senators are in the tank, okay? They're brutal. They got nothing going on, Russ. The most thing they did was hire a coach. They're now the training ground for another new coach. The guy's a good guy, I think, and all that. But they got no superstars. The owner is a freak, he's a crazy guy. He's talking about selling the team. He can't make an arena deal, blah, blah, blah. And I always thought that tape you're talking about was a taxi driver, Uber driver, who got the four guys in the car, and they started ripping all the coaches.
It was funny.
Now, as funny as shit it is.
I love how you talk about, you know, if you're listening and you talk about the Ottawa Senators, like you think like somebody in India or like Europe is fucking listening to our show?
Yes,
are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me?
Russ is a podcast. We've got, and don't forget India, Russ. India is a hockey hotbed. Come on, we know that.
Okay. Well, you know, Anthony Robbins, Tony Robbins, is a member at Gozer. I'm gonna tell him when I see him that you must have watched all his videos because the power of positive thinking. You think some guy who doesn't know that the NHL exists is listening to our fucking show?
Sometimes I hate you. You know, sometimes I hate you.
Well, you should light it. You haven't lit a cigarette, and our show is going to end. And
my point seconds. Was, if you think
what
you're
was your point?
If your team's in the fucking tank, you might want to start with that little video of your players ripping all the coaches before you start to look elsewhere, you know? Rusty, we're almost out of time here.
This might be our longest show yet.
It's our love. We're up to, and
you know what this is? That's my hard seltzer that's empty.
Yeah, I know. What? You're in what's on tap tonight, Russ? A good Modavi or something?
Oh! I'm going over to Mike Cameron's house up here at Gosser.
Who's Mike Cameron now? Tell everyone.
He's a buddy from Calgary. Oil and gas guy. Great. Yeah. Friend and great guy, and we're gonna make miso salmon tri-tip and a little chicken for dinner. All right. And hopefully he's gonna open some great wines.
Well, and hopefully
that's we
will. I'll tell you what, Russ, you're not going anywhere unless there's wine. Okay,
so no,
you don't need to say that anymore. Another great show in the books, show 11 or show one of a new season or something. Thanks a lot, everyone, for listening. Rusty, you have a good time. And we'll talk to you next time on this show, The Suspendables.
Love you, brother. Talk to you next week.
Okay, Rusty, bye-bye. Okay.